Hello everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Who We Are podcast. Today I'm so excited to have with us Joyce Chen, this season's in-house guest expert and also my personal and leadership coach, to come and share with us on a very important topic. Joyce is going to be with us for the rest of this season over the next 6 months on a weekly basis to walk us through very important topics in different realms of our lives. Today, we're delving into the fascinating world of emotional intelligence and the crucial role it plays in our personal and professional lives. You know, I was reading this Harvard Business Review article and it stated, "The most effective leaders are all alike in one crucial way. They all have a high degree of what has come to be known as emotional intelligence." In today's fast-paced world, where success is often measured by more than just technical skills, emotional intelligence emerges as a defining factor. But what exactly is emotional intelligence, and why is it so essential? Join me as we explore these questions and more with Joyce and uncover practical strategies for enhancing emotional intelligence, and also discuss how understanding and acknowledging our feelings, basically feeling our feelings, can lead to better decision-making and personal growth. Let's dive in. I am so grateful to have you with us for this season. You're going to be with us for the next 6 months, guiding us through very important and interesting topics. Personally, you know, Joyce has made such an impact in my personal and professional life. I'm so grateful to you, Joyce. I have also recommended you to some of the closest leaders around me, and they have also benefited so much from you. So thank you so much, Joyce, for who you are and what you do. For those of us who may not be as familiar, could you share with us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So first, it's just so great to be here. Obviously, I love working with you, and it's been such a pleasure to see everything you've been building, from what you're doing at Love Bonito and all like the new changes that you've done to the branding, to watching the evolution of Rach Reflects and now who we are. So it's so exciting to be a part of it, and I feel really honored and privileged to be a part of it. So I'm Joyce Chen, and I am a coach and facilitator with the Conscious Leadership Group. So I coach clients one-on-one. I do team trainings or group trainings. And our mission at the Conscious Leadership Group is to spread conscious leadership in the world. And before I was a coach and facilitator, I was actually a leader in tech. And so I worked as a producer in commercial production for a long time. And then my last role was being head of production at Meta, where I oversaw all the creative production for their 5 brands, including Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook.
And what are you so passionate about in what you do?
Oh my gosh. I'm really passionate. I mean, so many things, but I'm really passionate about spreading conscious leadership in the world. Because before I became a coach and facilitator using these tools, I was a leader who used these tools, and I completely redesigned my life based on the learnings of conscious leadership. I would say back in 2017, I don't know if I was a very conscious leader. I think a lot of times if we define consciousness as being in the here and now in a non-triggered, non-reactive state, I was pretty reactive to the busyness of my career, to the things that were happening in my life. And through these tools, I was able to find a way to manage my reactivity, to step out of feeling like the world was happening to me, and started to step into being the creator of my life. So beginning to see that I had agency for what I was creating and how I wanted to experience my relationships, my job, my anything in my life was up to me on how I wanted to create it. And really stepping into that power was something that conscious leadership helped me to do. And so then as a leader at Meta, I got to bring it to my team. I taught a class on conscious leadership where I brought it to so many leaders, and eventually transitioned into doing that in my full-time career. So I love the idea that I could bring these ideas and tools to so many more people, because they helped me so much to increase my experience of life, to find fulfillment, to feel fully alive. And if we can offer that to others, I think it's like the most fulfilling work that I can do.
So Joyce, in our very first session today, we are going to talk about a really important topic, emotional intelligence, and also our willingness to feel our feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading this Harvard Business Review article, and it said that the most effective leaders are all alike in one crucial way. They all have a high degree of what has come to be known as emotional intelligence. It's not that IQ and technical skills are irrelevant. They do matter, but they are entry-level requirements for leadership positions. So it seems like what really distinguishes the world's most successful people is emotional intelligence. Could you define for us what emotional intelligence really means and why is it crucial, especially in today's world?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And emotional intelligence is having the ability to manage both your emotions and understand the emotions of the people around you. Mm. And at the Conscious Leadership Group, one of the things we say is in order to have emotional intelligence, you first have to have something called emotional literacy. So emotional literacy is comprised of two things. The first is being able to clearly define what emotions are, and then being able to identify the core emotions. And so if we were to go through each of those components, the first is how do we define emotions? And at the Conscious Leadership Group, we actually believe that emotions are just energy in motion. So at its simplest form, emotion is just energy that's moving through and on the body. So for instance, if I'm feeling sad, and maybe this sounds obvious to some, but it was a wake-up call for me when I learned this. When I'm feeling sad, I feel some pressure, maybe under my eyes, maybe I'm feeling my throat close, and maybe my eyes begin to water up. So those body sensations and the feeling are one and the same. And so when you experience an emotion, that you feel a sensation in your body and it accompanies an emotion, and those two things are the same.
Mm.
So energy and motion is a really big takeaway. Because I think oftentimes, and I'll talk about this later in the podcast, we put labels on emotions that some are good and some are bad. And if all feelings are just energy in motion, there's really no good, bad, right, or wrong about any emotion that shows up. It's just an energy that's moving through and on our bodies. The second thing I would say is if we were to identify core emotions, we like to think about core emotions kind of like colors. So there are millions of colors in the world, but there are three primary colors that make up all the other colors. So we like to distill all of the emotions, and there are millions of emotions or words for different emotions, into five core emotions. So those five, if we were to distill them down, are anger, fear, sadness, joy, and creative energy, which is also sometimes called sexual energy. And while this is deceptively simple because it's just five emotions, each emotion has a huge range. So anger can be feeling maybe a little bit of tension. It can move to agitation. It can go to full-blown rage, right? There's so much inside of each of these emotions, even though it sounds simple to just have five. And sometimes when we're having a more complex emotion, you can feel multiple emotions at once. So if you say, I'm feeling hurt, that might be a combination of anger and sadness. Or if you're saying you feel guilty, that might be a combination of fear and sadness.
What are some common misconceptions about emotional intelligence and how can we debunk them?
Yeah, so there are so many that I hear as a coach and practitioner. And I've thought about like the three top myths that I hear about emotional intelligence. So the first thing I hear is like, there are certain feelings that are bad and should be avoided. And that's anger, fear, and sadness. And what I want to say about that is putting labels on emotions is something that we learn from the world. We learn it from our conditioning, how we were brought up, what we saw in our environment or in society. And I would say that because emotions are just energy in motion, there is no good, bad, right, or wrong about them. So I like to use an example of like if your stomach rumbles, it might just be telling you you're hungry. So in a similar way, emotions are energy that move through your body. And when you feel your cheeks getting hot, it's just some anger arriving to give you a message because all feelings carry a kind of intelligence. They have data or a message for us, which I can talk about later. And the way, if we know how to manage and express our emotions in appropriate ways or healthy ways, there doesn't need to be a negative outcome or a negative expression of that emotion because at their core, emotions are neutral. They're just information that's showing up in energy in your body. So the second myth that I was going to talk about is this idea that emotions are not intelligent. Now, I think that's probably something that we all learned at some point in our lives too. Like how many times have you been told like, that you're just being over emotional or you're reacting with your emotions and that's not important or that's not valid. I think many of us are taught those messages at an early age, depending on how we were raised or what culture we came up in. And at Conscious Leadership, we really believe that everybody operates from three centers of intelligence: the head, which is IQ, the heart, which is EQ, and then the body, which we call BQ, it's body intelligence. And because feelings are accompanied with sensations, the way we express feelings, the way we channel their intelligence shows up both in the heart and the body. Now, in the current day workforce, I think most of us operate up here. You know, we're on Zoom all day long, or we're rationalizing things, or we're thinking about how to solve problems in a really logical way. And we're using our IQ, which is important. But when we don't tune into the intelligence of our heart and our body, our EQ and our BQ, we're actually missing out on 2/3 of our intelligence. And what I want to say about that is that our body intelligence is actually an older form of intelligence than our head intelligence. So wow. you may have had a feeling in the past where maybe your stomach turns or you get a little nausea even before you have the thought, I'm scared. Or maybe you have some like tightness in your face or your throat begins to close maybe hours before you even recognize or have the thought, I'm sad. And so I always like to say the mind might play tricks on us, but the body never lies. And so when these sensations arise, they're really inarguable and they're worth listening to. It's a kind of intelligence that's really hard to argue with and is so intelligent, so wise.
Amazing. No wonder they say the body keeps the score, right? And that is also why, you know, and in my previous conversation with Dr. Gabor Mate, he also said like a lot of illnesses and autoimmune diseases are caused also by emotions like anxiety. There are suppressed emotions as well. How do you recommend for us, Joyce, to tune into our EQ and BQ, which is emotional intelligence and body intelligence?
Actually, one thing I would say about that is that it's good for us to know not just how to identify the core emotions, but to know that each one carries a kind of intelligence and a specific kind of message.
Wow.
So for instance, it might help to talk a little bit about the framework that we use in Conscious Leadership and we use in coaching called above the line and below the line. So when we are reacting to something or being in relationship with something, including emotions, from above the line, we are open, we are curious, and we are willing to see life as a game of learning. When we are in relationship with anything, including emotions, from below the line, we're in a state of resistance and threat. So each of the emotions carries a really important intelligence. And when we're with them from above the line, we can access that intelligence. If we're with them from below the line, it ends up being shown in a different kind of expression that may not be as helpful. So I'll talk a little bit about what that looks like. So first, I'll talk about sadness. From above the line, sadness is the energy of something that was once important to us, something that was meaningful, is either changing or going away. So when sadness arises, it carries a message and it just asks us, what wants to be let go of that I'm holding on to but may not be in service of me anymore? So from below the line, if we're in an unhealthy state of sadness, we might be in a place of like, woe is me. It's like a sinking feeling that you feel like you can never overcome that sadness. Instead of using it as a kind of empowerment to look at the world and say, well, what wants to be let go of that my sadness is inviting me to notice?
Wow.
And then anger is the intelligence of something needs to stop or change. And so anger is really intelligent and something I think all leaders need access to in order to cut and destroy what is not in service of them, their vision, or their teams. And I mean that in a benevolent way, that they know how to get rid of something or to move away from something because it's not in service and they want new things to grow. Below the line anger, when we're in a state of resistance and threat, is about blame and criticism, saying it's your fault, who caused this, or even blaming ourselves. So we want to go for that above the line anger to really harness that intelligence. If we move to the third, there's fear. So fear tells us, pay attention, get present. Something new wants to be learned from what's happening here. So fear usually shows up in our stomach and it just tells us like, pay attention. What do we want to learn? When we're below the line around fear, we're stuck in the past that we don't want to repeat. And we're just imagining that it's going to happen again, or we're stuck in a future that we're imagining could happen, but maybe it's really disconnected from the present moment, how we're imagining it. And so we leave the present moment and we get stuck in the past or future and we worry or we get anxiety around that. So a healthy fear just says, notice, pay attention. And then joy. A lot of leaders say to me, there's no way that I repress joy or I have a good relationship with joy. I want to feel more joy. And that's because joy is the energy and the intelligence of something wants to be appreciated or celebrated. Mm. And it's so important to feel joy as a leader so that you can pause and celebrate yourself and your team, and it cultivates well-being. And when you don't have access to joy, a below-the-line joy, I would say, is circumstantial. Like, I'll be happy if I get a promotion. I'll be happy if I get a raise. And it's really based on outcomes versus an intrinsic feeling of well-being, that I enjoy what I'm doing and therefore I want to celebrate and appreciate that versus I'll be happy if somebody else likes it. And then the last one I want to touch on, which is called creative energy or sometimes called sexual energy. Mm-hmm. This is the energy of innovation. It's the energy of ideas. This kind of intelligence, when we get creative energy, tells us there's something new that wants to come forward, something that wants to be made or created or born. And so if you've ever worked with someone and you've like locked eyes with them, I don't know if you've had this feeling before. I'm sure you have. And something happens, like there's an energy, a spark between you and your collaborator. And it's almost like being turned on by life, being turned on by the thing that is happening. And it's not necessarily sexual. We call it sexual energy because it almost feels like being turned on, but it's like a kind, and it lives in your sacrum, in your body, when you notice that creative energy is here. But really what it's just telling you is like, wow, something new wants to happen. And what is that? And from below the line, I think sometimes creative energy can get mistaken for lust. So I think a lot of people might have crushes on like actors or musicians. And it's because there's a creative energy that's getting ignited in us when we hear their music or we see their work. And it can get mistaken a lot of times for lust because it feels like it's moving in your body, especially in your sacrum.
What does it mean, Joyce, to be emotionally intelligent, right? Mm-hmm. How do I know if I am emotionally intelligent? And I'm also curious to understand, like, how does it play a role in achieving success personally and professionally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what I would say is it's being emotionally intelligent means having awareness that emotions are just energy and motion flowing through our bodies. And it's a natural and normal human occurrence that has no labels. It's actually just information that our body's trying to provide us with. Yeah. So if we're able to take stock of what the emotions are first by locating the sensations. So instead of trying to overthink emotions or try to have like a strategy around how to be emotionally intelligent, it's something that's arising naturally in each of us every day in the way that we respond to the world. So can you pause and notice what sensations are showing up in the body in this moment? I was once in a meeting and a team presented something to me and they didn't answer the brief. And they had a month to work on this project. And I noticed my face got hot and my hands got a little bit clenched. And I felt the sensations of anger arising. So just being able to notice the sensations of feelings and then being able to name one or more of the core emotions is going to give you as much emotional intelligence as you need to be able to then inquire, oh, anger's here. What's the message that it wants to deliver for me? And if you have any trouble locating the sensations, the Hendrix Institute actually does a lot of research on this topic where they did a whole body of research where they talk about different parts of the body and how they represent the emotions. So jaw, head, shoulders, neck, that's where anger shows up. So sometimes when I work with leaders and they have unexplainable migraines or headaches, I might ask them, like, is there something you're angry about that you're not aware of? And then sadness is in the face and the throat. And so if a leader tells me suddenly they feel like their throat is closing or their eyes fill with tears, we might just check, is sadness here? And what wants to be let go of as you're responding to the world? Other areas in the body to pay attention to are fear. Fear's always in the stomach. So if there's nausea, if there's something turning in the belly, fear might be present. And sometimes I work with leaders who have digestive issues, they have severe stomach problems, and if it's not connected, directly connected to some like medical diagnosis, I might just say, is there fear here that hasn't been processed or noticed? And then joy vibrates usually up and down the spine. So if you notice some tingling in your spine, there might be joy that's been untapped or unfelt. And then creative energy, like I said, is in the sacrum. So some people describe it as like movement or warmth in their sacral area, and others say experience creative energy as tingles in their arms and legs. I've heard both, but those are quick shortcuts to know like, okay, some sensation is showing up in my body. How might I match that to an emotion? And once you have a sense of what that is and what's here, then you can actually inquire about the intelligence of the messages that each of these emotions are bringing.
No, that's really interesting. So bringing us back to the example that you brought us, you know, a few years back when you were in a meeting and the team didn't deliver the brief and you felt, you know, tightness in the jaw and you know, your hands. How do you work through that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such a good question. So because I was in the practice of conscious leadership, I noticed that I was having the sensations of anger and that showed up first, even before I had the thought, this is making me angry. Then I was like, oh, anger might be here. And I tried to see if I could just own and allow it. So like, can I acknowledge anger's here? Would I be willing to allow it? And can I appreciate what it's here to tell me? And so a lot of times when we're noticing emotions are arising, we might just want to breathe because that's what I did in that moment. Because when we feel a strong emotion, sometimes what we do is we hold our breath and the emotion gets stuck. And it doesn't move through us, and therefore we can't access its intelligence. And so if we just do a few gentle deep breaths, and then from there, I ask the emotion, anger, if I know anger is the energy of something needs to stop or change, what needs to stop or change in this moment? And instead of going to below the line anger, which is blame or criticism, I was able just to say in a very clear way without pointing blame or criticism, I just said, hey, I want to pause. I'm noticing I'm feeling some anger in this moment. And without blame or criticism, I just want to say I asked for this brief to be answered. I'm noticing 10 minutes in that it's something different is being delivered. And I would love for you to go back, look at the brief, and come back to me when you feel you have answered the brief. But I have a no to spending another 50 minutes talking about work that's not answering the brief.
Wow.
And so it didn't have to be an expression of below the line anger. And in my conditioning, I grew up around a lot of below the line anger. And so I know how damaging and destructive that could be. And so I was careful not to go to blame and criticism and instead just say, what needs to stop or change? And how can I do that in a kind, thoughtful way? And my team actually thanked me later and said, thank you so much for showing us what healthy anger could look like. And you were right. We didn't answer the brief when we looked at it, and we'll get back to you in 2 weeks. If I had ignored that, if I had suppressed it, because that would have been another option, just to ignore it and listen to the whole presentation. What would have inevitably happened there is by blocking out that heart and body intelligence, I would have been ignoring an important message that was going to help me navigate this team and my work a little better, or like I wasn't following my inner wisdom. And so if I had held it back and repressed it, I think I would have been resentful towards the team. I would have started to have judgments around them. Maybe I would have withheld those judgments, and then it could have created an energetic block between me and the team. And so there are lots of downsides of when we don't recognize that an emotion is here and what message it has for us. If we're not willing to listen to that and to use it as a guide, as much as we use IQ, there can be some detrimental side effects in the way we show up inside of relationships.
How do we know if we are denying it or repressing it? How does it look like? Because maybe some of us, we've been so conditioned to, you know, repress and suppress it and deny it that we may not even be aware that that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And that happens so much. So I'm really glad that you called that out. I think it's like so common that when a feeling arises and it feels uncomfortable, or if we put a label on it, like as a leader, you shouldn't be scared. Or, you know, if I'm a friend, I should never show up with anger. There's lots of stories we tell ourselves around why feelings aren't allowed why they're not acceptable, why we're not going to be approved of or belong if we express that feeling. And so I think one way we know that we're not feeling those feelings is, like, from a sensations perspective, you might feel some pressurization. And so oftentimes what we do when a feeling comes up and we don't want to deal with it, we either stuff it down. And one thing that can happen when we stuff it down, I want you to imagine like a beach ball, right? So we take the feeling and we push it down. And we're just doing that in the back of our unconscious. I don't want to feel angry. I don't want to feel sad. So I'm going to do something else. I'll stuff it down and maybe I'll drift to another activity. And that drift activity can look like anything that's going to numb us out from feeling that feeling. It could be overeating. It could be drinking. It could be shopping. It could be watching too much Netflix. But something that will take our mind and attention away from that feeling so that we don't have to feel it and we can numb out somewhere else. Inevitably, it takes so much energy to hold down that beach ball that we don't realize it's costing us energy and why we're so tired. And then eventually that beach ball is going to want to come up. And so we'll get tired of holding it and holding it. And then one day we let go and it bursts out of the water. And oftentimes what I see is like an extreme burst of sadness or an extreme burst of fear or anger. And it might feel disproportionate to the thing that triggered it. But that's the effect or the downstream effect of somebody that has maybe drifted from their feelings too long, pushed their feelings down, and then it kind of bursts out in an unexpected way. And another thing that we can do to avoid feeling our feelings is to recycle our emotions by telling ourselves stories. So sometimes what might happen is something happens in your life. Say you wanted a promotion and you go in your manager's office and they tell you you're not getting a promotion. Maybe you don't like the way they told you. So yeah. Your face might get hot. You might clench your jaw. You might notice angers here. And then instead of pausing to feel the feeling and to take some breaths and to see like what intelligence is here, instead of actually pausing to process it, you tell yourself a story like that person's a jerk. They don't respect me. They've never valued me. I should quit. These are all stories that perpetuate even more drama-based feelings. We call this like drama-generated feeling or thoughts, or another word for it is a cognitive emotive loop. So you feel something, you tell yourself a story that amplifies it, where you're literally like blowing on embers and like reigniting a fire. And then you believe that story, you don't inquire if it's true or not, and then you get more mad. Then you keep telling yourself that story and you get more mad. And it's a really dangerous loop that I call energy expensive. It just costs a lot of energy when we recycle our emotions all the time by believing our stories.
Wow.
What I would do, there are lots of things we can do, but I just want to pause there in order to move towards releasing and processing feelings versus repressing, denying, drifting, or recycling.
Distracting it, yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing you do is you locate the sensation around. I just worked with a client the other day who said she was putting her mother in a retirement home and that she was unable to work. It was actually causing some like cloudiness in her ability to function. And she had been compartmentalizing, putting that aside and not wanting to feel those feelings. So if I had that client in front of me, I might just say, locate any sensations you're feeling in the body. And based on what I explained on how sensations and feelings show up in your body, she might feel pressure in the face, maybe some tears in the eyes or a closing of the throat. And then locating that sensation lets you know, oh, sadness might be here. So tying the sensation to the emotion, can you notice it? Or if I had a client who's angry, they might notice tightness in the jaw or a headache that they can't explain or a lot of tension in their shoulders. And we might just say, oh, those sensations are here. There might be anger here. And then we breathe. I always liken the body to like a house where wind is blowing through. Emotions are like the weather, the wind that blows through the house of ourself. And if we close the doors on the emotion, if we don't allow it to blow through, the house begins to collapse on itself. And in order for our house or our well-being to stay structurally intact, to stay strong, we need to let the emotion pass through. And so breathing prevents the wind from getting stuck in the house. It prevents the feeling from getting trapped in the body where it has nowhere to go and it can't move. And then the last thing that we do is we match an experience or whatever internal experience we're having with an expression. Now, this is a practice that we use at Conscious Leadership Group that's maybe a little different or what people aren't used to practicing in everyday life. So hear me out. I'll explain what it means to match your experience to your emotion. If I like to, I believe that as human beings, we're like alive and it's so helpful for us to vocalize things and to move our bodies. And so that it just helps us process what, however our body's reacting to the world, a relationship or a circumstance. So when I locate a feeling, sometimes I might ask myself, if this sensation or this feeling could make a sound, what would it sound like? Or if this feeling could move, what would it move like? And sometimes I have a hard time expressing anger sometimes. And so I might say my anger feels like, it might sound like, oh, or oh, you know, like give it a noise. I don't mean talking about anger. I mean, give it a sound. And then giving an emotion. So I might shake my fists or pound on the table. Just something that allows my body, my voice to process the emotion and give it a match. So it's not just inside, but now it's outside too. The body naturally releases energy on its own if we're not busy suppressing it. And so by us practicing like moving it even more, giving it a release, we're allowing that feeling to move through the body. And what's left is not the feeling, but just the intelligence of the feeling.
And are there any, you know, steps that, you know, we can immediately start practicing to start being aware and start attuning?
Yeah. So my former colleague, Jack Craven, actually introduced me to an app that's really easy to use called How We Feel. And it's a simple app that helps you take stock of your emotions. So if you're having trouble noticing what you're feeling, you could download this app and just once a day or a couple times a day, like it lets you select emotions so that you just increase your awareness around what's here. And then I always say that meditation is a beautiful practice, whether it's 5 minutes a day or an hour a day, whatever works for you. It's just a moment to pause in the busyness of our daily lives and to step into the observer's mind and be able to see ourselves from another perspective and notice what's going on. Just that pause is so helpful. There are other kinds of pausing activities like journaling. I mean, the power of journaling is so wonderful for our self-awareness and our emotional self-awareness. And then I've even done something called bilateral drawing, which is a different kind of expressing emotions. So it's when you take like one hand and you draw whatever you're feeling. And it doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to look like a picture, but it can be sharp lines. It can be wavy lines. So I'll just do that with one hand and then I'll switch the other hand, tune into what my body is feeling or what emotions might be here, and then I'll draw with the other hand. So it's a practice called bilateral drawing where you're actually able to do a little bit of that match by noticing what's showing up in the body and then drawing it out. It doesn't have to be good or artistic, but it's just a way to express and to externalize whatever feelings are there. And it's like I think it's a really powerful and helpful practice for just moving that wind through us. And giving ourselves that extra boost so that we can distill it down to, okay, how is this here for me? And how might it help me navigate this relationship, this circumstance, or some unknown future that I'm stepping into?
I love that. I love it when you talked about pausing, right? Because it reminded me also of this quote by Viktor Frankl where he said, between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. So I think so many times, you know, like you talked about in the very beginning, we don't have to react to every emotion that we're feeling, but really in taking a pause and to letting and to breathe through it, I think, and then after the extracting what it's trying to tell us and the intelligence behind it, it's so helpful for us. So thank you so much, Joyce. And if you have any last words on this topic at all for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I want to say about emotions is I really believe in Esther Perel's quote, like the quality of our lives is determined by the quality of our relationships. The reason I think it's important to bring up in a conversation about emotions is that in order for us to have healthy relationships, it's important to honor that we are all feeling beings that have emotional responses to what's happening in the world. And so being able to process them and then to share them with each other is a really important, an important aspect of being known and being close in relationships. When we don't share our emotions with each other, when we can't feel them, locate them, feel them, when we can't move them through and we can't communicate them to each other, I find that it's almost impossible to maintain a close relationship. And then that starts to affect the quality of our lives. And so something that I want to caution people about is when we withhold our feelings from the people that matter in our lives, whether it's our colleagues, our family, our loved ones, our friends, when we don't express whatever feelings are going on, or we're not known around them, sometimes it can create an energetic block where there's just space and distance. And then over time, the more you withhold, the more of that block exists, and it's hard to have closeness. And another danger that I see coming up is grudges. So grudges are just like a repressed anger. And I think that we learn to hold grudges when we don't think it's okay to process anger, to feel anger, and then we don't have the intelligence of what needs to stop or change. And instead, we just hold a grudge. And those grudges, I think, can be really damaging to relationships because they create big energetic blocks. And then eventually they're really hard to close those blocks. And it makes closeness really difficult when we're in the habit of going to a grudge instead of being able to notice, oh, anger's here and it's not wrong or bad. It's intelligent. How might I notice what needs to stop or change so that I can process and release that in a healthy way and then be expressed, vocalize what I want to stop or change in the world, and how might I be revealed to the people in my life around that?
I've learned so much even from today, even though I have also practiced this with you, and I myself, you know, have also benefited from it. You know, initially I was a bit skeptical in a sense where I said, how can emotions be intelligent? And when you walk me through, you know, what I was going through personally as well, I found it so helpful in identifying, you know, even like fears, what is it trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. Or sadness, what is it trying to tell me? And that has also helped me so much in giving me a much larger perspective and wisdom in approaching situations and people as well. So thank you so much, Joy. This has been very eye-opening for me as well to hear, you know, in depth from you with regards to emotional intelligence and feeling our feelings.
You're so welcome. It's such a pleasure to talk about this topic, which I hope that more people continue to talk about in the workplace, because I think everyone can benefit from leaning into the intelligence of our hearts and our bodies.